everyone. My name is Cameron Bouzard-Jumeri, and I'm welcoming you to MITRE's Knowledge Driven Podcast. Today, I am joined by Tammy Freeman, a business process engineer at MITRE. Tammy, would you like to tell us a little about yourself?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me, Cameron. I appreciate it. I am a business process engineer. I also work with business innovation, specifically design thinking.
That sounds like a very interesting area to be in. And as I understand it, you have a very interesting topic you want to talk to us about. Specifically, you volunteer as a social impact consultant, which gives you a unique insight into how we can define and maybe redefine innovation here at MITRE.
That's correct.
So maybe without getting too in the weeds, what does a social impact consultant do?
So social impact consultant, the best way I can describe it is kind of versus a volunteer. So a volunteer mm-hmm. will go and they'll volunteer their time to, say, you know, an orphanage or, you know, cleaning up the highway. Social impact consultant, we are more concerned with doing work in the economic, political, and social infrastructure and ramifications of where we do work. We're looking not just at going to, you know, volunteer for a couple of hours or a couple of days. We're understanding the short and long-term impact of the work that we're doing. And we're looking to really do the least harm, right? Mm-hmm. So we're looking at our footprint in the areas that we work. We're looking at not just outputs, but also outcomes.
Okay. I think maybe a way I would understand that is a lot of the times when you see people take on efforts, they're trying to solve symptoms and not causes. And so a lot of your work, it sounds like you go into these areas and you're trying to understand what are the foundational things that cause people to be in these situations. Is it a product of their environment? Is it a product of a mismanagement of resources? Things like that.
Correct. Absolutely. And it's not something that you do and you put down, right? It's mm-hmm. something that you live, right? So I'm always in the places I work, which are Nairobi, Kenya and Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. I'm always in tune to what's happening there, you know, economically, politically, socially, of course, because I need to keep abreast of what's going on because these are affecting the people that I work with. The other thing is that sometimes there's the notion of volunteerism or mm-hmm. voluntourism, they call it, right? Where people go and they're tourists, but they volunteer. And sometimes some of these things are set up where they actually do more harm than good. Mm. So I don't go to places for the photo op. I don't go to places because it makes me feel good. I go to places where I feel like I can do the most or have the most impact with the smallest footprint and use my capabilities that many of which I learn and hone here in MITRE. To do some good in the world, which is, you know, doing good in the world is corny sometimes, but, you know, I think that's important.
So I'm very curious, with your background in volunteering and also your work at MITRE, I was curious kind of what your path was getting into the volunteer work mm-hmm. and maybe starting at MITRE and how you see those two roles right. playing off each other.
That's a great question. So it's actually MITRE's fault that I actually started doing this work. Because I'm extremely driven by impacting the people on the ground, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm extremely driven by solving problems that can make the lives of individuals better. And so that's why I came to MITRE, because MITRE is, you know, mission focused, and we're focusing on the beneficiary or the people who need the services. When you mm-hmm. work for the VA, you're focused on veterans. When you work for, you know, Social Security Administration, you focus on people who need services that they provide. The same thing with social impact work. The difference is normally I'm working with the people who are not only affected by whatever the problem is, but they're also the innovators. So they've now seen a problem in their community and they're taking then steps to remedy it via whatever means that they have.
Well, let me actually bring it back to the kind of that leading point we had, which was your work you described as being able to help you define and redefine innovation, mm-hmm. which is very core to MITRE's mission and a lot of the work we do. We try to innovate. And I was curious, what kind of events and roles help you redefine that terminology?
So the only way I can answer that is with the story.
Well, we're here for stories.
So picture it, June 2016. So I'm in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and I'm working with an organization in a favela in Rio. Mm-hmm. And at the onset, I'm going in because I have capabilities, you know, Lean Six Sigma, process improvement, and things mm-hmm. like that can help. I mean, that can help anybody. But I quickly learned that that capability was secondary to understanding what was actually happening with my client and the people that my client served. I think that was kind of the turning point for me in this work and understanding my role and to bring it back, the role in which I play at MITRE and having that empathy. And not just empathy, it's more of the understanding that the world in which I exist and the world in which other people may exist may be night and day. It doesn't make it right or wrong. It just makes it different. So how might I then adapt, and how might I then adapt the things that I do and the things that I, the capabilities I have to do something that will help them in the long run, and help impact the work that they do? Does that make sense?
It sounds like it's a question of context, really. You're so used to having this, I guess, not bureaucratic, but very business-oriented understanding of how Six Sigma and all these different business process improvement tools are supposed to work. And when you enter the real world, when you step out of the corporate setting, that application just does not translate.
It doesn't translate. And when you exit that world and you enter into a different country and you're working with people who are marginalized and live on the peripheral of society, it's a totally different world. And, you know, so I go in, you know, typical consultant style, and here our goal was, you know, this is what we're going to do. And, you know, listen to my client and trying to craft out a plan that would move them forward. And reality hits where you can't reach your client because they don't have electricity. So there's no internet, or they don't have running water. And so it's not that that is a work stoppage, but it's just a different thing because our clients here, they have internet, right? They have running water. They have these kind of basic things that sometimes you take for granted. And so having to adjust and adjust expectations. And I think most white people are kind of maybe a little bit ambitious in a good way, but sometimes you can't always get everything done in a day that you want. And culturally, you know, even working with different cultures like Brazilians, time is different. So, you know, 11 o'clock is 1 o'clock, you know. And so these types of things you have to make adjustments for when you're doing this work.
I think going back to that, how we define and redefine innovation, it sounds like what you're getting at is that maybe a few things are definitely off when you step from the innovation space we're typically in to the real world. And this can be anything from going from like one city to another, all the way to going from one problem area trying to get autonomous cars to be a thing to another, which is supporting military, just supporting civilians in these hostile environments. And please, I do not mean to oversimplify. So if I say something wrong, feel free to correct me. But it sounds like one of the biggest problems that you have to deal with is assumptions. The assumptions that, oh, I should be able to go into this community and there should be some of my training, something I know about process improvement should apply here. But while the assumption that process improvement is probably still a valid approach, the way you go about it, it has to be completely different because, as you pointed out, they don't have fundamentals we expect a community to have, like running water.
Not consistently. They have it, but sometimes it's not consistent. So it could be randomly just cut off for days at a time.
And in some ways, that is worse because in one case, it's easy to understand, all right, there is no running water. Now we understand this is a constant, or there is running water. But the fact that the water is intermittently unreliable becomes troublesome because now you have to be able to adjust on the fly to a new situation.
Exactly. And I think, you know, with innovation, when I talk about innovation in marginalized communities, I think when people think about marginalized people, they think of poor people, right? People living in poverty. But poverty is not just the lack of money. It is probably more important, the lack of resources, the lack of access and opportunity. Additionally, socially, society then kind of paints a broad brush on them, and they become lazy, or they become, you know, somehow, you know, the undesirables of society, right? Because they are poor or marginalized or whatever have you. Now you have them being socially, politically, and economically excluded. So you're battling that, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just, I don't have any money. So I just wanted to get to the innovation part of that.
Yeah.
We have a group within MITRE. It's the Innovation Toolkit. And they have, in my opinion, probably the best definition of innovation. You'll see innovation that ties things to technology as long as or if it meets this criteria, then it's an innovation. If it's not a technological advancement, it's not, or you have things that tie innovation to market value. If I can sell it or if something, and that's not it. So I think innovation, and this is the definition that the toolkit team uses, is novelty and impact. Mm-hmm. And that's broad enough to encompass, I think, some of the work that I do. And it's not too narrow where it excludes what we call kind of innovations of the informal sector.
And actually, I don't know how much you can speak to it, because I know that you want to be very careful in describing the different groups that you work with in your volunteer work. Mm-hmm. But can you talk to maybe an example where novelty and impact really play a role in how you understand innovation when helping them, or even how you understand it here at MITRE?
So again, innovation is novelty plus impact, and not contingent upon technology. Innovation also does not have to make money. So we need not assign a market value to something in order to determine if it's worthy of being innovative. Finally, which is important, they also need not scale, right? So many of innovations are local, mm-hmm. and that's okay. And I think that if anything that we can learn or try to hone in on at MITRE is understanding that, and I know that we drive scale because that is, it's faster, it's cheaper. If we can replicate something, you know, it's always seemed or deemed ideal. Local communities sometimes are worthy of their own interventions and innovations. And you may or may not be able to replicate that exactly. Maybe you can kind of take that as a model and base it off of, base future work off of it, but it doesn't necessarily need to be scalable to be innovative. There's a company in Nairobi, Kenya, called Sanergy, and they help to solve sanitation issues in urban slums. So kind of funny story, if you visit Kibera, which is, like I said, an urban slum in Nairobi, you may hear somebody say, watch out for the flying toilets. So I'll let people Google that on their own. However, there are big issues around sanitation and sewage. And so Sanergy comes in and they provide what they call non-sewer sanitation solutions for residents in urban areas. And so they also have a franchise model. So again, they're empowering communities and empowering people to solve problems that are local, giving them these solutions, and then also allowing people who are franchise owners to profit off of them in these areas where people would be normally shut out. Again, when I talk about people, marginalized communities being shut out of systems, this is what I mean. And these innovators come in and they have these ideas that they're able to kind of implement and then to bring to these communities that are now helping to solve problems. This one is interesting because this was not started locally by a resident. This was started by MIT for a global challenge, right?
Yeah, I think that perfectly hits the concept of novelty, where normally maybe us in the United States might not think of this as novel, but given the typical way an effort like this might actually be undertaken in another country, exactly. This is a clearly novel approach. And then the impact is even greater because you are making a community necessity, also a job and money generator that's helping empower the community to maybe not be lifted out of poverty, but have more options, more exactly. opportunity that they might not get otherwise.
That's it. That's exactly it. And these are the things that we see. I have a client in Nairobi, Kenya, and he owns a company called ReAfrique. And he lives in Kibera, again, which is the largest urban slum in Africa. And they have, like many slums, sanitation problems. And what he does is there's a cleanup effort to clean up the slum. So what he does, he takes materials that he can use to create shoes for children, school-aged children, because there's a standard shoe that they all have. So it's a standard shoe. Then he makes, you know, kind of more like designer, if you will, shoes using materials that were thrown away in the slum. What that does is obviously helps to beautify and clean up their community, but he also provides jobs and job training to people. And then he provides children shoes that their parents may or may not have been able to afford, right? So it's not free, it doesn't give them away, but they're much less expensive than if they went out to, I guess, a quote-unquote regular store and purchased them. So these are people making interventions in their communities with the problems that they see. So they live these problems. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a slight difference between, you know, the work that I do there and us at MITRE. We don't always work with the people who are living the problem. We work with the people who are
trying to
inviting
help.
Us, right, inviting us in. And so there's, it's a little bit of the seat and where you sit can be slightly different.
But that's a valued perspective to bring to those people, to say that this is a problem that we understand. And we understand, more importantly, that this is not just a problem you're going to snap your fingers and solve. It's going to be an effort.
Well, and I think what's interesting is that, you know, the individuals who are affected by these problems know what they need to do to solve the problem. But again, if you are marginalized, you don't have resources or opportunity or access to do everything. And so what we see is an emergence. And, you know, part of it is necessity, entrepreneurship, or, you know, and I think we need to understand that when I go in and I kind of partner with these organizations, individuals, I am part of the team, right? I'm not bringing anything to them that they don't already know, other than maybe something very specific, like, you know, how to improve a process, how to look at things differently, maybe some, they're driving, right? They understand the community. They understand the needs that they have. And so I'm just part of, you know, the team that's helping to kind of help them get to where they need to be. What you find in these areas are individuals who are solving problems where the government either will not or cannot, and where business has deemed it, you know, not profitable for them to go in and do. So they're kind of left on, you know, to their own devices. And you see amazing things that come from this. And we can learn a lot from them, not necessarily us going and kind of showing them the way. That's mm-hmm. not it. Like, we could, it's a two-way street.
Exactly. And I think that's a big thing to bring back to MITRE, is the fact that at the end of the day, we are being invited to solve problems that realistically organizations can solve, but because we are a not-for-profit, because we're not driven by the same motivations a lot of other organizations might be driven by, mm-hmm. it gives us license to kind of expand our focus, to understand not just what problem we're trying to solve, but understanding if it's even a problem at all, and bring back exactly. kind of those goals around innovation to say, you guys have a, not necessarily a problem, but you have a process that maybe you're misunderstanding, mm-hmm. and we, either as MITRE or in your volunteer work, think that there is a way that we can empower you to go beyond just solving a problem, to re-evaluating how you understand it as a problem.
I think with our design thinking work, and so in the business innovation in my department, we do a good deal of design thinking. And design thinking starts with empathy, right? Mm-hmm. And understanding the problem.
That is so very true.
And you know, a lot of times we treat, not just we as a MITRE, but in general, we treat symptoms and not problems. And the other thing that we can tend to do is treat what we know how to treat, mm-hmm. right? And so I may not recognize this problem as something I can treat. So I'm going to kind of contort it so it's something that I have the skill set in order to solve. And that only gets you but so far. Then you have the problem again, and then you're back to square one. And I think, you know, using design thinking is a really good way to kind of empathize and really understand what the problem is. So, you know, if a client comes with a symptom, we may find out, well, that's, or they may say it's a problem. We may find out that's a symptom. Here's the problem. And part of that understanding the problem is actually talking to the people who are experiencing it. So they can actually give us more insight into what's going on. And then we can kind of design solutions that fit the requirements and that actually solve the issue at hand, as opposed to putting a Band-Aid on something.
All right. I think this has been a very enlightening conversation. So if anyone listening is interested in learning more about what we've discussed today, what resources would you point them to?
In terms of innovation and informal sector innovation, there is a good deal of academic research around how do we value and understand informal sector innovation, and looking at the methodology in which we do so. So you can just Google informal sector innovation, and there'll be some links that'll come up, which will inevitably lead you to more links and other information. So I think that's a really good start. In terms of social impact consulting, there are a few good organizations that people can get involved with if they're interested in. And, you know, somebody, they can contact me if they have specific questions about that.
I think that's a great place to end it. A quick thank you to MITRE and the Knowledge Driven Enterprise for making this podcast possible. And of course, a big thank you to you, Tammy. Tammy Freeman is a business process engineer at MITRE, and This has been a very enlightening talk. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Cameron. I appreciate the opportunity.